Today's episode of Open Floor is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Longtime listeners will probably know that Ben and I are Mack Weldon evangelists. On any given day, one of us is wearing Mack Weldon sweatpants. They make great clothes, comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies. And they're kind of like an adult version of all those things, so they're classy enough to wear in public. And all their products are antimicrobial. So check it out. Ben, what are your Mack Weldon thoughts?
I mean, we are enthusiastic Mack Weldon evangelists. I mean, we're spreading the gospel of this great company. It's quality, it's affordability, it's value. It's soft texture, too. I mean, the merino sweater's so nice to the touch. Sweatpants are super comfortable. And like you said, I mean, this is not bum gear, okay? This is classy sweatpants. You can wear any occasion. You can go to a nice dinner in these sweatpants. That's how good they look. I vouch for them.
Yeah, it's almost dangerously classy because sometimes you go out and you're like, wait, this is not a place I should be wearing sweatpants, but you can kind of get away with it. So that's solid.
I totally disagree. Every time I put Mack Weldon on, I think this is a place I can wear sweatpants because Mack Weldon opens up the world to me.
All right, well, good. Open up your world. MackWeldon.com. Get 20% off using the promo code OPEN. You should check it out. And here we go.
MackWeldon.com, promo code OPEN.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. You know, you had a toss-away comment on a podcast last week, something along the lines of maybe Kawhi Leonard should be in this MVP mix, and it kind of dawned on me that maybe I had oversimplified it just a little bit too early, and then now you're back this week for the Told You So, aren't you?
A little bit. I actually was going to ask you, I don't listen back to our pods, so I wasn't sure whether one of us had explicitly championed Kawhi as MVP. I've been kind of monitoring his MVP odds for the last month or so. He's been steady at like 15 to 1. And like, clearly,
you sound like a compulsive gambler.
Well, I've just been, the other thing that's tough is I don't know if they're going to give us votes. So I don't want to I don't want to influence it too much. I don't want to bet too much. But look, 15 to 1, he was the best bet on the board because you knew people were going to start to look at what the Spurs have been doing and start to like wake up a little bit with Kawhi. Anyway, he's now down to 10 to 1. And I mean, last night, it's hard to argue. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. The morning after Kawhi just sort of destroyed the Rockets by himself, that was wild.
Yeah, I think we should lay out the case for him, and then I'll play devil's advocate a little bit, because you ever had that situation where you want something to happen because you think a guy's earned it and he does it the right way, and it would, you know, be such a crowning achievement, but you kind of like want to manage your hopes and expectations because you're worried it might not actually happen? That's sort of where I'm at with Kawhi Leonard.
This is big for you. Kawhi Leonard is Rod Tidwell and you're Jerry Maguire.
So we'll lay out his case and then maybe I'll play devil's advocate and we'll try to decide whether maybe the holes in his case are going to hold him back or not. How's that sound?
Okay.
Let's start with his case. And it was basically, as every single person on the internet wrote yesterday, that final closing minute where he comes down and bangs a three like he's Steph Curry, and then he blocks a shot off the backboard like he's prime LeBron James, right?
Yeah, you know, so I hit up Matt Dollinger, our editor at Sports Illustrated, and was like, I want to write about Kawhi's MVP case. And this was Monday morning, and I almost regret piling on to like the internet's MVP mania last night. I wish I could have written this like a week ago, because like you said, like we were kind of inching this direction for a couple weeks now with Kawhi, so I feel bad that I'm like now part of the masses. But yeah, that sequence at the end sort of captures everything. And it was also, I wrote about this today on Sports Illustrated in my one of like a dozen different Kawhi MVP columns out there. Like Harden, for the first 2.5 quarters, was doing like whatever he wanted to the Spurs defense. And he, like, the thing with Harden, he makes the pick and rolls look so easy. that it's almost, you almost have to remember to be impressed, because it just sort of looks like he's just jogging through everything. And you have to remember that, like, NBA games are not supposed to look like that. And that's like, it's amazing that he can do that. And so anyways, he was doing that. He had 30 points halfway through the third quarter. And then Kawhi switched on to him, and suddenly, like, everything became twice as difficult for the Rockets. And that, like, that to me was as impressive as the fourth quarter offense, because, like, everyone always sort of pays lip service to Kawhi's defense, but, like, when you really sort of play it out in some of these matchups, whether it's against Russ or whether it's against Harden, like, he's not averaging a triple-double, but he can, like, shut these guys down.
Well, and that's what Popovich said too, right? And for years, Popovich has always kind of ducked, endorsing his guys or kind of pumping them up, or it's always self-deprecation coming out of San Antonio, right?
Totally.
And even earlier this week, Popovich was like, oh, that's what Kawhi's paid to do after he had a big night.
It's yeah.
Like, well, yeah, he is a max guy, but, like, he's still doing phenomenal things, you know, above and beyond his contract. But, you know, he comes out with his post-game comments and basically says a lot of guys can shoot threes. Harden can shoot threes. Kawhi can shoot threes. But how many people can make the block that he made on Harden? And that's just a symbol of his overall defensive impact, which is, I think, what you're saying. And I mean, are we at the position where we need to be thinking that Kawhi could potentially win both MVP and Defensive Player of the Year this year? Like, sweep him?
I mean, who else? I think Rudy Gobert deserves a lot of love for Defensive Player of the Year. So, I mean, you could go any direction. Like, Draymond, Gobert, Kawhi, there's not really a wrong answer for that one.
Yeah, it seems like perhaps in the past, Kawhi has won narrow wins over Draymond on Defensive Player of the Year because maybe voters assumed that he wouldn't get the MVP love. So you wonder if some of those voters are going to vote for him for MVP, do they take away their Defensive Player of the Year votes and give it to somebody like Gobert, who's been sensational and a guy I've been championing basically the whole way for that award? That'll be really interesting kind of to play out. But let me ask you this. In terms of building his case, if the Spurs have the best record in the league, if they move past the Warriors, and nobody saw that coming because Golden State was cruising and the Kevin Durant injury kind of derailed their season, or at least, you know, took them off their crazy record pace.
Right.
Does that make him the MVP? Like, is that going to be the straw in his hat?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, look, if the Spurs finish with the best record in the West, I don't think it's even a debate, you know? And it's, I understand this is one of the closest MVP races ever, and, like, everyone is deserving who's in this mix. I mean, I kind of am a little skeptical with some of the Russ stuff, but, like, Harden and LeBron are both super deserving, and Kawhi is as well. But, like, if Kawhi finishes with the best record in the West with that Spurs roster, he's winning.
Yeah, and let's go ahead and build his case up a little bit more. So from a player efficiency standpoint, he's ahead of Harden and LeBron. From a usage standpoint, he's not that far away from Harden. He's also above LeBron. In terms of his kind of overall stats, he has played the fewest minutes. But if you look at impact, you know, San Antonio's top five offense, number one defense right now. So, you know, in terms of his role leading a phenomenal team, I mean, it's not a fluke. They're not just randomly at the top of the standings and the records.
Yeah.
He's had great health. Which is, you know, always something that you have to look
Availability is the best ability.
No doubt. And so, I mean, that's a pretty comprehensive case, I guess is what I'm getting at, is he doesn't really have a weak link. I mean, maybe you would say the weak link is his narrative. I mean,
yeah,
because he doesn't really care. But have you started to see slivers maybe of his personality coming out here a little bit more lately?
Not really, to be honest with you. I mean, I did see someone caught a screenshot of him smiling about a week ago, which is a big step in the Kawhi Leonard narrative. But in general, he's still kind of a robot, but we've just never seen someone. So for me, his case as MVP is that he, like, yeah, you can make the case with various numbers, but, like, he's just a total ass kicker. And I think the thing that bums me out is that sometimes people give him these backhanded compliments about, like, he's a more complete player than James Harden or Russell Westbrook, or he's the best two-way player in basketball. And, like, that's true, but no one says that, like, Kevin Durant is the most complete small forward, or LeBron James is the most complete player. They call them the best. And right now, like, this season, Kawhi is certainly the best next to Harden and Westbrook. You can make a case. It's hard to argue with LeBron's MVP case this year, but if you put Kawhi next to Westbrook and Harden, like, there's no competition in terms of who you would want on your team.
Yeah, so here are the arguments maybe people would make against Kawhi. Number one, when you take those guys off the court, how do their teams perform without them? In other words, Who has the most help, right? And San Antonio's numbers with and without Kawhi are pretty steady. Obviously, given the role that Harden and Westbrook play, and also given what we talked about recently with LeBron and how the Cavs look without him, you know, Kawhi is the outlier there. You know, San Antonio is getting by better without him. Their system, everything that they've done, you know, all the other pieces they've accumulated and the roles they've crafted for those niche guys gets them along better when Kawhi's on the bench than the other three. I mean, do you find that a compelling argument against Kawhi?
That's definitely a compelling argument against him. I would just say that if you actually watch the Spurs on a fairly regular basis, I mean, like, I basically, because I was getting ready to write this MVP column, and I watched some of the Pelicans game on Friday night, I watched some of the Wolves game on Saturday night, and I watched the Rockets on Monday. And that, like, they do have guys who can sort of, like, hold the fort maybe better than OKC can without Russ. And, you know, like, Houston's role players are actually were better than the Spurs last night. But they have a little bit more talent around Kawhi, but I also think that if you took him off that team, like, that's like a 42 win team. And he especially against the better teams in the league, like, he is the only real weapon that scares people.
Yeah, I've never been a real fan of this argument of, like, holding guys, you know, cast against them, because then you get into situations like with Curry or Durant this year where, okay, they're not going to be considered at all because their team is so deep. I just don't think that's, like, a very accurate way to measure value. But I agree with you. I think the Spurs would still be 500 or better if they just didn't have Kawhi.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any of those other teams would even be close to that. You know, I think especially the Thunder, they would be really up a creek, especially offensively. And the Cavs, I just think the leadership factor would, you know, lead to some self-combustion if they didn't have LeBron.
Yeah.
Well, here's one other area that Kawhi is an outlier.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of, like, created offense for others. His scoring numbers match up pretty well to the other three. But in terms of, you know, generating offense, I mean, he's obviously not on the level of these other guys when it comes to being an entire offense by himself. Now, obviously, he does that in certain situations, like down the stretch where he just went into takeover mode. But night to night, play to play, possession to possession, he is not a distributor on those other guys' level. Does that cause any concern for you?
Not really, because I think there you then have to account for the defense. And, you know, I think at that point it sort of evens out. Like, no, he's not putting up 8 assists every night, but he is defending the best player on a fairly regular basis, and he's sort of like the trump card when guys are going off, and that is just as helpful as whatever shot creation Harden or Westbrook bring to the table. And LeBron, I mean, basically Kawhi's case is that he is a regular season version of what LeBron turns into in the biggest games of the playoffs. Like, LeBron's not going all out on defense every night, but Kawhi is. And, like, that's the only reason I would give him the edge over LeBron in this debate. And, like, again, you put that team, because the other thing is, you look at the teammates, like, Kawhi has about the same talent level that LeBron does. And, like, their head-to-head in Cleveland about a month ago was phenomenal, and Kawhi won. So if the award is just being given to whoever wins this season, like, I think Kawhi's got the edge.
Okay, so how, I mean, you're making this sound almost like a slam dunk. How will Kawhi lose this award then? I mean, do they have to finish basically have to finish second in the West so he doesn't have the best team. Mm-hmm. Westbrook has to finish with the triple-double. Harden has to finish, what, in the third seed? And the Cavs just have to maintain their number one seed, and then it just gets to a situation where the votes too split? Or what do you see as, like, holding him back? Or are you just ready to say, hey, he's the favorite now? This totally shifted everything, the game last night.
No, I don't think he's the favorite, because he's not as famous as some of those guys, and I think a lot of people are going to look at the Spurs system and say, and kind of discredit Kawhi the way certain people will look at Tom Brady and say that he's not actually like the greatest quarterback ever, because he's like, what would he be without Belichick? What would Kawhi be without Pop? And like, I sort of get that. I understand the impulse, but I also think like watching that Rockets game was really interesting, because like, how do you separate Harden from D'Antoni's system? And I like, how do you separate LeBron from a team that is stacked with like the perfect role players to play with him? And I think if you want to start nitpicking these guys and some of the advantages they have, then it gets kind of dicey. So it's not a slam dunk. This is a close race, and reasonable people could disagree, but I just feel like everybody is just about even right now. Certainly Harden, LeBron, and Kawhi. And at that point, the guy who ends up winning the most games deserves to win. And we'll see. I think to answer your original question, like, how could he lose this? If he goes in and blows the game to the Warriors Saturday night at home, if he loses to the Cavs in a couple weeks, like, that will be something that sort of makes everyone take a step back and calm down a little bit.
So just for context sake here, Kawhi's player efficiency and points per game averages this season are higher than Tim Duncan's ever during his Spurs career, right? And so Duncan did win an MVP 2003. So it's not impossible that, you know, a San Antonio guy off the radar would be able to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the context for Kawhi, right? Is like, now you have to have this argument, is peak Kawhi a better individual player than peak Duncan? I'm not sure I'm ready to go there. But
it's a different era too. Like, this is an era where there are a lot of guys across the league putting up ridiculous numbers. I will say the one thing with Kawhi's numbers, if you look at him over the last 2 months, he's even better than his numbers on the year. Like, he's averaging 30 a game, and most of these fourth quarters, he's kind of closing them out by himself. And that's what we've been talking about on the podcast for a couple weeks, is like, if you actually watch his offensive game, like, it's wild how advanced he is at this point.
Yeah. I mean, his scoring average has increased every single season. His, you know, shot load has increased every single season. I think that's going to be the narrative that needs to really gain some force here, is that maybe Kawhi hasn't had this giant leap forward, but yeah, he's made so much progress year after year after year that he's now put himself in this position where this maybe should be the culmination of all of that work. I mean, I don't know how much San Antonio cares about trying to get stories out, but like this year, for example, Houston has done a masterful job of putting Harden's story out there, right? Turnaround, no more Chloe, no more Dwight Howard, bring in D'Antoni, turn them loose. Like, that's a really easy narrative to wrap your head around if you're a voter. For Kawhi, to just be like, you're a madman, or whatever you were saying earlier.
But yeah,
that is kind of hard for like a casual voter to completely buy into, right? So I don't know what the best story is for Kawhi. I think best player on the best team plus the steady improvement to just lights out, close to best player in basketball tag.
It is.
I think that's
it is really
that's the
funny
best story he can have.
It's great how Maury and the Rockets are like layering sports media with different stories about how Harden's like a whole new person this year. And Pop is just like, yeah, that's what the money's for. Kawhi's good. What do you want?
Well, let me ask you this. Of the four guys that we've talked about, LeBron, Kawhi, Russ, and Harden, which of those four would anger you the most if they won? Like, who do you think you would have like the biggest beef with?
I mean, I don't want to get too into the Westbrook thing. The last time we talked about Russ, someone transcribed my comments, and I had Thunder fans like sporadically hitting me up on Twitter for a couple weeks afterward. So we don't have to get into Russ now, but I do think that it's kind of ridiculous that two or three rebounds a game somehow gives him the edge over someone like Harden. Like, if you confine this debate to Russ and Harden, like, it shouldn't even be a discussion. Harden's team is so much better with about the same level of supporting cast. And, like, so, and Russ is doing great things, but he also kind of ran off the second best player in the league last year. And that, to me, factors into the most valuable discussion. And, like, the other night, he had 40 in Phoenix, but his team lost by 10. So, I don't know, like, if your argument is basically, like, the rest of the Thunder's supporting cast just sucks, then that's fine. But I also don't think that's accurate. Like, I think there's some real talent there that kind of atrophies because everything revolves around Russ.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to look the other way on some of the things with Westbrook that you mentioned if they are the 5 seed,
yeah,
right? Or if they're like a 4 seed but trailing. But right now, you know, they're kind of stuck in the 7, losing skid. They may get to 6. But when you look at the other candidates, you know, Kawhi, Harden, and LeBron, I mean, all those guys are going to be top 3 seeds in their conferences. So I just kind of wonder, like, is that going to be the outlier that kills Westbrook's candidacy? Or is it going to just be the lowest hanging fruit? You know, the people just see the triple-double and say, I have to vote for him. Because I could see that going either way. And I could see a lot of hardcore basketball analysts being really frustrated that the triple-double somehow puts Westbrook over the top, even if his team is the 7 seed and even if they're not at 50 wins and falling short on all of the criteria that Mark Cuban's kind of put out there for the Westbrook haters as arguments against him.
Yeah, and it's weird to me that people are that amazed by the triple-double when, you know, Harden's numbers are every bit as absurd. And like LeBron had 30, 17, and 6 last night. Like, he's doing things that are just as ridiculous as what Westbrook is doing. And again, Kawhi dragging this Spurs team to like 65 wins and a 1 seed would be more impressive than any of them. So it is a good race. It's going to be fun to sort of like chop up this debate over the next couple weeks because it's only going to get more intense. But I'm just glad that your guy, Kawhi, is officially in the mix now. I actually haven't checked his MVP odds today. They were 10 to 1 last I saw. But he's in the mix, and I've never felt closer to you than our mutual love for Kawhi Leonard's MVP candidacy.
You turned 30 and the whole world changed. I mean, it's really obvious. Like, I hate to bring that back to you, how old you've gotten, but it's true.
It's a big victory for the pod. We should move on, though. Tell me about Clippers-Celtics. Let's do 5 minutes on Clips-Celts.
Oh, you wanted to talk about the real MVP, Isaiah Thomas, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it was interesting last night because I didn't get to watch that whole Spurs game. I only got to see chunks of it because I was trying to get down to the Clippers-Celtics game and then, you know, kind of trying to really hone in on this Isaiah Thomas experience, which I've been hearing so much about. It was a strange game because like the Clippers were just trying to pound Isaiah and pick on him in the post over and over and over in the first half. And like it wasn't really working. They didn't really have a lot of flow. And then they just sort of went back to more normal basketball in the second half. And they just kind of blitzed the Celtics off the court. And Boston didn't have enough up front because Horford was out to kind of keep up with guys like Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. And, you know, Isaiah was asked to do a lot late and he really didn't. You know, and afterwards, Brad Stevens was like, you know, Felton killed us with his physicality, which is not necessarily the kind of assessment you want to hear from a championship caliber team or a team that supposedly has championship aspirations. If Raymond Felton's killing you, that's going to be a problem.
It's a red flag.
Yeah.
Also true if Tyler Ulis is killing you.
I mean, Isaiah, he really reminds me of Harden in terms of his overall offensive impact and how he's getting his points and how easy he makes it look. A lot of what you said earlier about Harden in the pick and roll kind of applies to Isaiah. But at the same time, like the way they lost that Clippers game was a great blueprint for how they could be a disappointment in the playoffs. You know, you don't want to overreact to one game. Obviously, they had a tough one in Phoenix, too. And after the game, you know, Isaiah was pretty frustrated with you know, how they lost, you know, because they just basically gave up like a 41-14 lead in the second half, you know, just kind of the inexcusable type,
yeah,
letting go of the rope type game. But that's the blueprint for beating them, right? I mean, ask Isaiah to do too much. If he's not on, their offense gets junked up. They don't have a lot of front court options, especially without Horford to keep up. And, you know, he's not perfect. Like, and the downside of putting everything on one guy's shoulders and hyping him up as this MVP candidate like some people in Boston have is that he's very, very, very good, but I don't think he's like a top three or four offensive player in the league right now.
Totally.
And, you know, it will come back to bite you when the defenses ramp up. And I think the Clippers really wanted that game. They've had shaky effort recently, but you know, they kind of came out and took it to Boston late.
Yeah, that's my biggest question for you, really, is like, I'm with you on the Celtics, and the reason they are very good, they are deep, they are going to be a pain in the ass for anyone in the East to deal with in a 7-game series. But I also think that we've seen Isaiah against the best teams in the league, like his fourth quarter heroics aren't always there. And like, I think if you put him in the playoffs, like he's still got a lot to prove. So there's that. But I'm most curious, like, it feels like we haven't talked about the Clippers for like 3 months. Like, what are you seeing from Blake? Because they also play every night at 10:30. Like, I haven't even really watched much, a lot of the Clippers. I mean, my guy Jamal Crawford, definitely more of my spiritual MVP candidate than Kawhi Leonard would be. He went off last night. Like, it seems like they are quietly getting their act together.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, they are so Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde right now. Like, okay, that was the good Clippers for sure, and they still have that in them, but they just haven't been going to that fastball with great regularity, and there's been a bunch of games recently where just the energy wasn't there, and, like, the games have been super flat. I mean, they got run off the court by Houston last week, where it was almost like, you know, role reversal compared to this game against the Celtics. So they're still a huge enigma to me. I don't really know what to expect. They've never been able to recapture their early season momentum.
Yeah.
And so that leaves you in this situation where they could make a dark horse push to the conference finals. Like, I think that's still their ceiling. Or they could be out in round one very easily, you know? And I wouldn't say there's a ton of confidence brewing at this point, but just because of the inconsistency factor. Like, they weren't super pumped up about that win last night. I think Jamal Crawford liked winning the battle of the Seattle bucket getters against Isaiah. And I think that's, you know, some pretty good bragging rights. And
yeah,
he was kind of asked about Isaiah afterwards, but like, this is not a finished product, and you're starting to get worried here because like, it is early March, and they had so much time without Chris or Blake that, you know, it's about time to wrap this together, right? Like, it's about time to start building that steady momentum upwards, and they just haven't been able to do it.
I kind of enjoy this version of the Clippers. And by the way, having just seen their schedule, yeah, it really has been Jekyll and Hyde with losses to the Bucks. They got blown out by the Spurs. We'll see. But I like that. I like them coming in as like a complete wild card, where everyone around the league is just like, well, shit, who knows what's happening here? Like, this could all be over in 6 weeks, as opposed to like, having the entire world try to talk themselves into the Clippers as like the number one Warriors challenge. This is more fun.
Yeah, so here's the thing though, like, they're pretty much locked in to a matchup with Utah. I mean, whether, you know, who has home court and all that, I think is still up,
yeah,
but that is the most likely scenario, 4 or 5. And they have totally owned Utah in recent years, like, mm-hmm, in the head-to-head matchup. And they have complete experience advantage against the Jazz, and they have a great matchup for Gobert, you know, with DeAndre,
yeah,
I mean, kind of canceling out
point.
That guy. So I think if you're the Clippers, there's a lot of reason for you to get excited about potentially being able to take on the Jazz and just kind of treat them like the new kid on the block in the postseason. They've got some pieces to throw at a guy like Hayward, you know, and Bamute is long, you know, pretty well suited to that matchup. You know, Chris Paul versus George Hill. I mean, I think you'd still take Chris Paul, even though Hill's been playing well. And I'm not sure that Utah's got a great answer for Blake positionally. So I think if you're the Clippers, like, the Jekyll and Hyde stuff might not matter that much based on the way the bracket's going to play out. But then again, if they do get stuck in that 4 or 5 matchup, that just means a second round showdown with the Warriors, and Durant should be back at that point. So
yeah.
I don't know. If I had to guess where this season's going for them, probably, you know, they win the first round over Utah and they fall apart in the second round, and then they have some really serious offseason issues. You know, if I was Magic Johnson, though,
what?
I think my first move as Lakers president would be to plant every possible seed to try to get Blake.
Ooh, I like that idea. Man, I hadn't even thought about that.
If you're Magic and Pelinka, like, your whole strategy's got to be the star power, right? Like, these guys aren't going to be playing Moneyball. Like, let's build slowly from the bottom. Like, that can't be the strategy, right?
Not only that, so I feel like Blake has been inching towards some kind of exit for, like, several years now. But when you play it out, and if you're Blake Griffin, you're like, I don't want to live in any of these other cities. Like, maybe Miami, maybe New York, but there really aren't many better options for him. He's just perfect in Hollywood. He's the perfect Hollywood star. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think if I'm Blake, the question is, do you want to play your entire career with Chris Paul, right? Like, is that who you want to be? Because it's kind of always Chris's team, and eventually Chris is going to start fading here. But if you're the Clippers, like, you have to just pay Chris, just like if you're the Raptors, you have to pay Lowry, right? Like, all the things we've talked about with Lowry in terms of his age, wear and tear, and all that stuff, like, fine. You still have to swallow and pay him, right?
Right.
And I think if you're Blake and you know that, you should be thinking about it. And imagine, like, the best case scenario I could come up with sort of off the top of my head last night was Blake goes and is the face of the Lakers, gives them that superstar presence. They're able to get their draft pick this year, you know, bring in, a talented young lottery pick type guard. Maybe that's Lonzo Ball. Potentially, you can now dangle both Russell and Randall as trade pieces. And then you can also set your sights on the following summer trying to bring in Paul George, right? And so now maybe your best case longer-term core is Paul George, Blake Griffin, Lonzo Ball, and spare parts. Dude, I mean, if you're the Lakers, wouldn't that be a home run?
This is my favorite theory of yours in a long time. Like, this would be Magic Johnson going from Verbal Kent to Kaiser Soze, with his tweets being Verbal Kent. And then suddenly stealing Blake. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean.
So here's the one hang up to this theory.
What?
The confidence in Magic around the Lakers right now in terms of the media members is very low. Not nearly as high as it was on the podcast that we did last week when I was going on and on about how great it was to finally get rid of Jim Buss.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I was going to let you have the Magic optimism for a little while. And who knows? He might know what he's doing. Or Pelinka might know what he's doing, and it won't matter that Magic has no idea what he's doing.
I guess my argument is this. If you don't really know how Chris is going to age, and you're Blake Griffin, do you want to spend your prime years as the face of the Lakers or as the number two guy on a team that's probably going to be going no further than the second round of the playoffs?
Dude,
like, what's the chances you can build the Lakers into a team that's back in the playoff position and potentially winning a series within a couple years? I think they'd be pretty good if you've got Blake Griffin as your main attraction, right?
Jeannie Buss would do that just to cripple the Clippers forever, too. Like, the Clippers, there's just no coming back from that. I mean, suddenly...
Well, look, if you're the Lakers, your thirst is out of control at this point, so you're going to do it for whatever possible reason you can do it. But yes, that would be a nice side benefit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I love it. Something to watch for, people. And we're going to finish up with tanking talk. And the Lakers are at the forefront of that conversation as well. What do you think? What you said you had some notes here.
Yeah, so there is a lot of teams that are sort of in a real wide range of outcomes for how the lottery could determine their future. And the Lakers obviously are right there. And they're doing everything possible right now, make no mistake, to ensure that they have that number two slot. Because if you don't want to be in that number three slot, if you're the Lakers, because somebody's going to jump you, right? I mean, the worst case scenario is they drop to fourth, they lose their first round pick, and now they're just kind of stuck without any real avenue of either manufacturing a good trade this summer or potentially finding a D'Angelo Russell replacement.
Well,
and that's sort of the buzz that I was hearing last night at Staples, is like, people are starting to look at their watches on Russell and saying, like, where's the progress? Why isn't this guy getting better? And did you happen to see the game against New Orleans the other night?
I did not.
Okay, well, it was like five straight possessions down the stretch. He screwed up in one way or another. And it was like right after DeMarcus Cousins like fouls out in the final 2 minutes. So like it's a win like right there for the taking. And, you know, Russell's just throwing the ball out of bounds, getting caught in the air, just doing all these just, you know, terrible things I guess you expect from a young guard, but he's not making the leap.
You know what else I saw? He's kind of stuck. He's shooting like eight threes a game, which to me is too much if you're not a if you're not a great 3-point shooter, you need to chill on the attempts. Like, figure out a different way to score, figure out a different way to impact the game. Maybe that's Luke Walton is telling him to do that, but I just, like, Steph Curry can shoot 8 threes a game. Like, maybe Eric Gordon, like Bradley Beal, James Harden, like, but if you're not hitting, like, come up with a different strategy.
Yeah, and so I think that's the question for them, bigger picture. Like, if you're a new regime, you know, if you're Magic, are you tied to Russell as your guy or not? And the answer is probably not. And I think just personality-wise, Russell really hasn't answered the questions in terms of leadership potential, maturity. I mean, all that stuff is still hanging around him. So for the Lakers, in terms of tanking, letting him ruin these games late is the best-case scenario, whether he knows it or not, because that could potentially wind up putting the Lakers in position to draft his replacement.
Yeah, man. It's high-stakes tanking here. And actually, correction, I just looked it up. D'Angelo Russell is shooting 6 threes a game, which still feels like too much. And he's shooting 34%, which is not ideal. But what you left out there also, they lose their 2018 first-round pick if they lose this pick, which... At that point, you're talking about two likely lottery picks out the door, dependent on how much they can suck over the next couple weeks. So I am proud of the Lakers for doing everything they can to really sabotage this. Whether that's just like ISO D'Angelo and just sort of pray, like, this is really sort of desperate times for LA right now.
Yeah, and they've lost 7 straight, and in an ideal world, they don't win again.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Luke and you can stretch this out to like 20 plus losses, go for it.
So who else, though, do you think? Because I came up with a couple teams. I think the Kings should be the second most desperate tankers, and they're not. They all came very close to beating the Jazz the other night in a great game, but the whole time I was thinking, you guys are way too close to losing your pick. Like, they're 1.5 games away from giving away their pick, and because they lose it if it's outside the top 10. And like, they got to sort of bear down too and start clear out for Buddy Hield.
For sure. They're number two in the most needs to tank race. And I think that they're going to keep their own pick basically no matter what. They've lost 5 straight. They just don't have the horses at all.
Yeah.
And they have so many bad players on that roster that if they really want to tank it up, like, they can find lots of minutes for those guys and just pretend that it's player development time, you know? Like, I think if you put in Big Georgie, you know, Papayannis, and you give him starters minutes, you know, the losses are going to accumulate very reliably.
Yeah.
The tricky part for Sacramento, though, it's not just their own pick, it's New Orleans' pick too, right?
Totally.
And I think that is what complicates this, because if you're New Orleans, you can't really tank, right? Because you just made your big Cousins play. But at the same time, if they just continue to not be able to stack up wins, like, if they just, they had struggles last night with Jrue Holiday kind of getting benched down the stretch. The Cousins thing hasn't worked out great. Do they pull the plug? I think that's one of the biggest questions to watch, you know, in this going forward, because if New Orleans pulls the plug, that could really screw Sacramento. And they already have so many losses. They're kind of in the driver's seat. So that's a big one to watch as well, because that could set up a worst case scenario for the Kings, where basically the Pelicans keep their pick and then Sacramento is kind of, you know, behind them in the lottery order. So they don't have their own pick, isn't as good.
So, you know, what's interesting with New Orleans is, yes, they were number three on my list with teams that just need to go all out here and should be pretty desperate.
So you think they should pull the plug?
I kind of do, because
the loss in the trade,
I don't see them making the playoffs. So, like, long term, the best strategy to keep Boogie would be to luck out here with a Lonzo Ball or a Markelle Fultz or a Josh Jackson, although they need somebody who can shoot. But basically, landing in the top three would give them a much better shot. I think pretty much everyone can agree with that. The tricky part, though, is it's very difficult to, like, they can't just sit Boogie. They can't sit Anthony Davis after they've basically made this trade and announced that they were going all in for the playoffs. Like, they're going to have to be very careful about how they tank. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the tricky part is that they're not quite to that Lakers level or the Nets level. So they're in this really big pack of teams where, you know, one or two games could separate, you know, could jump you up in the lottery order, like three or four spots. So that gets tricky too, because you really have to commit to it. Like, if you want to do it, you kind of can't half step it.
And look, I think the reality of this is, as we tease this out, almost no teams are actively tanking and actively losing games on purpose. I think that the Lakers as an organization are the rare case of coach, GM, owner, everyone's on the same page. But you look at like the Pelicans, I think their best weapon might just be that they suck and they can't get it together. The Magic are another team that, like, they are just not good. They're not tanking on purpose. The Suns are actively winning right now. They've won three straight. So most of these teams are still sort of rolling it out there and trying to win. You could talk me into Philly maybe shutting down Embiid with an eye on the lottery standings as well. The one team, and this is my biggest takeaway as I've thought about this over the last 2 weeks, like, the Knicks really, really should be tanking and should be on the same page as an organization. And they just, like, they beat the Magic by double digits last night. And I don't understand why it wasn't just Ron Baker and Kuzminskis running pick and rolls for 48 minutes. Like, this is kind of high stakes. Like, they're on the cusp of the top eight, which, like, this draft goes 8 or 9 deep with guys who could be potential all-stars, but then it kind of gets thinner after that. And if you want help for Porzingis, it's right there. Just don't screw it up over the final 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you worry for a team like New York that by the time they're finally ready to all-out tank, it'll be too late, you know, because other teams will have already tanked harder.
Yeah, the time is now.
Yeah, for sure. That's tough, though. I mean, they've already had a lot of hits this year. You know, that's a team that's, you know, kind of, I think, motivated a little bit more by saving face than the average team, especially given their offseason moves, right? Like, it's a lot easier to just be shameless if you're Orlando. You already admitted that your moves didn't work with Ibaka.
Yeah.
Now you're just going to run it into the ground. I mean, that's a much easier sell than the Knicks, where, you know, Rose is saying they're a super team and Melo's hanging on for dear life. Like, there is a higher price to pay for doing that. And you got to wonder, like, for them, is it worth 2 or 3 lottery spots, you know, in the order?
We got to go through Derrick Rose's quotes at some point this year, because the other night he was talking about still looking ahead to the playoffs and still trying to keep his mind right. And I was just like, I texted you about it. Like, I'm concerned for his sanity and his well-being if he thinks that the playoffs are even, like, remotely a possibility. But all year long, he's been, like, sort of divorced from reality. So that should be a good way to round up the Rose Knicks era. Can I get one other tanking nomination? And this is another team that's just, like, allergic to actually losing on purpose. But the Mavs, man, there's an outline of a good team with the Mavericks. With Noel emerging, Seth Curry has turned into, like, kind of a weapon for them. And if they could get lucky and land at, like, 6 or 7 as opposed to 11 or 12, that could turn into kind of a fun nucleus.
Yeah, and I think it's going to go the other way. I think they have a real shot to make the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean,
they do.
They're kind of charging hard, and they should have just tanked. I mean, to me, them and Miami both should have just, you know, sold the farm and gone for it in terms of trying to get a lottery pick. But they, you know, they opted against that, and, you know, you can make arguments both ways in terms of, you know, keeping your fan base engaged and, you know, saving face. I mean, I think both those teams would love to have the 8th seed, you know, in their respective conferences, which seems kind of pointless. But the other team, though, the Sixers, I mean, if they have 2 top 4 picks, you know, if that's how it plays out, or the Kings as well, I mean, I think they can have a best case scenario where they can have 2 top 5 picks, depending on where New Orleans falls.
Yeah.
And how the pick swap works. I mean, either one of those teams, like, if you give those, you know, I mean, if you give any team 2 top 5 picks in the same draft, I think that's a game changer.
The big takeaway from both of us is that, like, almost everyone should be tanking in the current lottery setup. Can I just sim the lottery here on tankathon.com?
Do it. And actually, I agree with you. I think the bottom nine teams should all be tanking. Yeah. I mean, the only team that we probably shouldn't count is Brooklyn, but I think all of them have every reason to try to stack losses here. Some more desperately than others, but for sure.
Okay, so the simmed lottery has the Suns, your Phoenix Suns, big Ryan McDonough's biggest fan, landing at number one. Minnesota at number two. Man, that would be good. I would love to add Lonzo Ball to the mix there. Philly via Sacramento at number three. The pick swaps come back to haunt Vlade. And the Celtics at number four. Rough break for Ainge. Should not have kept that pick. And then the Lakers at five give their pick to the Sixers. Not a bad haul for the Sixers. And the Kings at six and seven. Do you have any gut feeling as to where Markelle Fultz will land?
I don't, but I just simmed it on tankathon.com as well, and my projection's way better than yours. Number one, New York Knicks.
That would be fantastic. Look, that's all I want is some help for Porzingis.
Number two, LA Lakers.
Okay.
And number three, Pelicans, so that they keep their pick. That might be the dream scenario. That might be the dream scenario right there.
Oh, man. Poor Kings fans. All right. Well, as we screw around on tankathon.com, clearly we're in the throes of the NBA dog days. But we will be back on Friday. And hit us up if you have mailbag questions, if you have hypothetical Markelle Fultz destinations. My gut feeling, I've had a weird feeling for like several months that he's going to end up on the Orlando Magic. I don't know why. But yeah, man, this was fun. Vote Kawhi. Any further thoughts?
No, just 5-star reviews on iTunes. And be sure to send in your mailbag questions or your fan fiction. We got some of that this week. It was really good. Appreciate that. And I'll talk to you on Friday.
All right, dude. Talk to you soon.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.